Well, I've been waiting 7 years for a case with this set of facts to make its way through the system and into one of the United States Court of Appeals in one of the circuits, and it's finally happened. Welcome to the new season of Broadcast Blue.
Bringing you the latest case law updates on the legal aspects of law enforcement. This is Broadcast Blue.
Hello, this is Bruce Allen Barnard, and I want to welcome you to our first episode of the 2019 season. I've been getting some emails. Hey, when are we going to have some more episodes? When is Broadcast Blue going to be back on the air? And I'm happy to tell you that the answer is now. We're our first episode here of the season, 2019-01, the episode. In this episode, I'm going to cover the case, the facts, and the legal analysis for a case that came out that I'm pretty excited about, as you could probably tell from that introduction there, United States versus Richmond. And this case comes to us from the Fifth Circuit, and the date of this case is February 8th of 2019. The key phrases for this case are vehicle search, Jones search, physical intrusion, and trespass. This is a really fascinating case. Like I said in the introduction, I've been waiting 7 years for a case with these facts to come out. And that's because this case involves a question as to whether or not when a law enforcement officer touches a vehicle, that physical touch for the purpose of gathering information is a search under the Fourth Amendment, that has to be reasonable under the Fourth Amendment. We've been waiting for a case that involved an automobile to come out asking that question, and that's exactly what the Fifth Circuit has done, is looking at in this particular case. So let's get to the facts. As you know, these cases are determined on a totality of the circumstances. And so the facts are very important. And when we're talking about Fourth Amendment decisions, we're talking about those sequence of decisions, and the sequencing of the facts becomes very important. So I'm going to go through the facts, and I'm going to go through the facts in the order that they occurred, because that's very important to this decision. This case comes to us from South Texas. A Texas trooper noticed a truck next to him on a highway, and this truck had wheels and tires that were shaky, wobbly, and appeared to be significantly unbalanced. And so the trooper got behind the truck. The truck crossed the fog line, and the trooper pulled the truck over for this violation of crossing the fog line. And as the truck was pulling over to stop, the trooper noticed that the truck had broken taillights as well. So the trooper runs the plate, discovers that the truck was registered in Brownsville, Texas, just 2 days earlier. The trooper approaches the driver, who's the defendant in this case, Richmond, and he notices that she avoids eye contact with him. Her hands are trembling, her mouth seems dry, and her lips had this white coating on them. When asked, Richmond states that she is from Tucson, Arizona, but she's traveling to Brownsville, Texas, where she said she was moving in with her husband. He asks her to get out of the vehicle. He wants to show her this broken taillight. And as they're going towards the rear of the vehicle, he notices that the rear passenger wheel, the bolts that the lug nuts go onto, they appear to be stripped, as if the lug nuts have been taken on and off numerous times and stripping the bolts as it happens. So the trooper at this point leans down and he pushes in the tire with his hand. And instead of feeling what he would expect to feel with air inside a tire, the tire actually gives a little and he hears a solid thumping noise that indicates there's something in the tire besides air. And so the officer, the trooper, asks Richmond, he starts asking her questions, and he asks her what her age is, and she can't readily recall what her age is. She cannot readily recall what her date of birth is. She can't even readily recall what her husband's name is. She indicates that she's going to visit a friend in Dallas, but when she's asked, she cannot provide the friend's phone number or the friend's address. In fact, she says that she plans on Googling her friend's name to when she gets there in order to try and find out what her address is, which really sounds, you know, kind of hokey to the trooper at this point. So he runs a check on the license and the registration. He discovers that the truck had entered Mexico just the previous day and had only re-entered the United States 2 hours previous to this stop. At this point, the trooper asks for consent to search the truck, and Richmond gives consent. And inside the truck itself, the trooper finds suspicious items. He goes to let air out of the tires and notices a strange chemical odor coming from one tire, and another tire didn't release air at all. He also notices that there are fingerprints on the inside of the wheel well, like the tire had just been changed, the prints on the dust inside the wheel well, and he notices an unusual amount of weights that have been added to the wheel in an attempt to balance the wheel. At this point, the trooper takes the truck to a local dealership. Secret compartments are found, and inside these secret compartments are found huge quantities of methamphetamine. Richmond is arrested and charged with trafficking the methamphetamine that was found in the truck. At trial, the defense attorney argues that the stop initially was bad and that once the stop was made, it was unlawfully extended after the stop. And so even if the stop was good, it was unlawfully extended, at least that's the argument, prior to the consent being given. Trying to show that there's a Fourth Amendment issue, there's a Fourth Amendment violation prior to the consent, such that the consent was tainted. So if they can show that there's a Fourth Amendment violation prior to the consent, then that means that everything that was found as a result of the consent, there's a good argument to be made that it can be excluded if they can make this a valid argument that there was a Fourth Amendment violation. The district court denied this motion to suppress, and the conditional plea was entered, allowing the defendant to file an appeal on the decision to deny the motion to suppress. But before sentencing, the defense attorney filed a new motion to suppress, and this new motion to suppress is based on the fact that the trooper touched the tire and arguing that touching the tire was a physical trespass, it was a physical intrusion on a constitutionally protected area, and it was done for the purpose of gathering information, and therefore it was a search under the Fourth Amendment, and that the search has to be reasonable, which requires either a warrant or one of the many judicially recognized exceptions. But since none of the exceptions applied in this case, that the search, the touching of the tire, was unreasonable. And since that came immediately prior to the consent, it would also taint the consent if the court agreed that the touching of the tire was an unlawful search under the Fourth Amendment. The district court judge considered but rejected this amended motion to suppress. The judge stated, and I quote, "As the law stands now, tapping tires is not a search," end quote. So Richmond was then sentenced and filed an appeal. And on appeal, the defendant didn't argue, Richmond didn't argue that the stop was unlawful or the extension of the stop was unlawful. The only issue on appeal was the district court's ruling that touching the tire did not constitute a search under the Fourth Amendment. And so on appeal, what's going up on appeal to the Fifth Circuit here, really two questions. You can combine them into one, but it's better to look at it in two separate ways. First, was the pushing in of the tire, when the trooper leaned down and pushed in the tire to see if it had air in it, was that a search under the Fourth Amendment by the trooper? And the second question is, if so, was it reasonable under the Fourth Amendment? So that's what the Fifth Circuit's going to have to take up on appeal in this case. The Fifth Circuit noted, and the government didn't contest, the fact that the initial stop was based on a traffic infraction that was valid. The crossing of the fog line was valid. Neither the defense nor the prosecution in this case argued that point on appeal. Likewise, it wasn't argued, but noted that the extension of the stop based on observations that were made once the stop had occurred. In addition to the observation of the wheels and the wobbliness, the demeanor of the defendant in this case after the stop was made, when the trooper approached her, the nervousness, the inability to answer very fundamental and simple questions, and the nonsensical answers to some of the questions raised a reasonable suspicion that she was involved in drug trafficking. And this led to the extension of the traffic stop into a Terry stop in order to conduct this investigative detention and investigate this suspicion of drug trafficking. And that would be in full compliance with the Rodriguez decision that came out a couple years ago from the Supreme Court. So there's no argument that up until the point the tire was touched that the dominoes were lining up, our Fourth Amendment decisions were taking place, and there's no bad domino yet. But now we're up to the point to where the tire was touched. The trooper pushed in the side of the tire in order to see whether or not there was air in it. The Fifth Circuit basically disagreed with the district court at this point. The district court judge had held that the touching of the tire was not a search under the Fourth Amendment, or under the law as it currently stands, I believe the wording was. But the Fifth Circuit disagreed, and they applied the rule of law that was developed in United States versus Jones to hold that the physical touching, this physical intrusion or trespass, if you will, upon one of the four constitutionally protected areas, in this case an effect, because the truck is an effect, this physical intrusion for the purpose of gathering information is a search under the Fourth Amendment ever since we had the ruling in United States versus Jones from the Supreme Court back in January of 2012 that fundamentally resurrected that old school definition of a search that it had existed in the Olmstead decision to sit side by side with the expansion of what constituted a search under the Fourth Amendment in the decision in Katz. The Fifth Circuit did a really, really good job in this case of discussing the difference, what happened in United States versus Jones, and how that brought back to life this definition of a search, and that it sits side by side with the Katz definition. And so there are two definitions of a search, and we have to go through both. And even though, as the government argued lower down in the district court, had argued that under Katz this would not be a search, and that's true, and the cases that they cited were pre-Jones cases for the contention that it's not reasonable to expect privacy in the exterior of a vehicle when it's in a public place. And that might very well be the case, but when you have Jones and this physical intrusion, it doesn't center around privacy. There's no element of that that revolves around a question of privacy. It is simply a matter of whether or not one of the four constitutionally protected areas, persons, houses, papers, or effects, has been physically touched, physically intruded upon in order to gather information. That's the sole question. And in this case, the court correctly noted that this is a search under the Fourth Amendment. Even though it would not be a search under Katz, it is a search under Jones. And therefore, the Fourth Amendment applies to this situation. And then the court went on, and they noted that there was no probable cause of drug trafficking at the time the tire was touched. The officer had a reasonable suspicion. The officer could articulate facts to give him a reasonable suspicion that there were drugs that were being transported in this truck, but not probable cause. And therefore, the touching of the tire, the warrantless touching of the tire, was not covered because of probable cause of the drug trafficking. But there was probable cause that there was a violation of the Texas Transportation Code, because it's a misdemeanor under the Texas Transportation Code to operate a vehicle that's in a condition that poses a danger. And what was noted by the officer with the wobbly tires certainly met that criteria. And so therefore, the Fifth Circuit held that, yes, this was a search under the Fourth Amendment, but it was reasonable because the officer had probable cause to believe that there was a violation of this Texas Transportation Code. And so that extended, that made the touching of the tire reasonable. The court also noted that since this search was reasonable, since the touching of the tire was reasonable, the consent to search that came after, immediately after the tire was touched, was not tainted, and therefore the consent was valid, and therefore all of the drugs that were found as a result of the consent and then seized under the Plainview seizure doctrine, which is another one of your judicially recognized exceptions, that was valid. Everything was okay. All the dominoes lined up. There wasn't a bad domino that tainted the consent, and therefore everything downstream was valid as well. The court also reminded us that the subjective intent or motivation of the officer in tapping the tire is not relevant to the reasonableness determination that the court has to make. And that when there is a particularized suspicion, what the officer's motivation is doesn't really matter. It's an objective test, not a subjective test. And so it didn't matter that at the time the officer touched the tire, he was suspecting that there were drugs and he wasn't thinking about whether or not there was enough air in it. It's not the subjective motivation. It's an objective test. So the district court's denial of the motion to suppress was affirmed, but it was affirmed for the right reason. The district court had got it wrong, and the Fifth Circuit corrected the district court and established that this indeed was a search and that it was reasonable because of the probable cause that this violation of the Texas Traffic Code had occurred. So let me add my two cents at this point and add a little bit of commentary to the decision and maybe some practice tips. You know, it took 7 years since the case in United States versus Jones came out in January of 2012. It took 7 years, but we finally have a United States Court of Appeals saying what I've been telling my students for years since this Jones decision came out, that physically touching an automobile, which is an effect under the Fourth Amendment and is therefore one of the constitutionally protected areas, one of those four enumerated areas, as Justice Scalia referred to them. Physically touching a car to gather information is a Jones search. It's a search under United States versus Jones, and therefore it must be reasonable. And for any search to be reasonable under the Fourth Amendment, you have to have either a warrant or a judicially recognized exception. I've been teaching advanced search and seizure law and search and seizure law refresher training to experienced law enforcement officers since the Jones decision came out. And at first, I wasn't too surprised when not many of them understood and appreciated the ramifications of the Jones decisions. But now, 7 years on, I'm still finding when I conduct these training sessions, these live training sessions, that there are many officers who don't understand the implication of Jones, who say that to touch a car, as long as it's in a public place, that's okay, it doesn't implicate the Fourth Amendment, and that's just wrong. In 2013, we had the Jardines decision, and then in 2018, we had the Collins decision from the Supreme Court that showed how important this physical intrusion was into the areas of curtilage and how the impact that Jones had on approaching someone's dwelling. But this is the first case that we've had, at least at the circuit court level, that has directly applied this same analysis to the touching of a vehicle, which is an effect. And so it's important to take this case for what it is and to read this case. I strongly recommend that if you're a law enforcement officer, you read this full opinion. It's only 12 pages long. It's very informational, very instructional, incredibly well written. And if you want a copy, you can download a copy of the case, the full opinion, from the Blue Blog on the Leo One website at www.leo.one. So the implications of this extends. It's not just pushing in the side of the tire. It's any time the car is physically touched in order to gather information. Now, this has implication, and this extends to dog sniffs of vehicles during traffic stops where a traffic stop has been lawfully extended into a Terry stop to conduct some type of criminal investigative inquiry. So you've got the dog walking around the car. Does the dog touch the car while it's sniffing? And if you've seen the way the dogs were trained prior to Jones, half their body would disappear into a wheel well trying to sniff under the undercarriage of the car, trying to detect the presence of drugs and narcotics. But now you've got Jones at play. And so if the dog touches the car, is that a search under Jones. And looking at this decision in the Richmond case here, you can't deny that just the physical touching of the vehicle, as minimal as it is, if it's for the purpose of gathering information, it's going to be a search under the Fourth Amendment. So we'll have to wait and see. The only wait for a case now to come out where the dog actually touches the car while it's sniffing, and see what the courts do with that. Although it wouldn't be surprising, especially given the decisions that have come out of the federal courts in the last 7 years, if they were to hold that that was unlawful, and that the probable cause developed by a sniff when the dog physically touched the car in order to effectuate the sniff would be an unlawful search under the Fourth Amendment, unless they generate some new judicially recognized exception for that, which I quite frankly don't see happening. So very interesting case, a very interesting set of facts. If you physically intrude upon an automobile, which is an effect for the purpose of gathering information, if you physically just touch it for the purpose of gathering information, it's going to be a search under the Fourth Amendment. And in order for that search to be reasonable, you're going to have either a warrant or a judicially recognized exception. A very good way to kick off the 2019 Broadcast Blue season. This episode of Broadcast Blue was brought to you by Leah One. Leah One for your training needs in the legal aspects of law enforcement. And our website address is www.lea.one. Want to take a quick minute here at the end of this podcast to let you know about some upcoming training. We have some Leah Live training sessions coming up. The Advanced Search and Seizure Law. It's an 8-hour, one-day course that I teach on advanced search and seizure law. Go into a lot of different things, including what we've talked about today. The next iteration of that course is going to be offered in Winter Haven, Florida on March 28th, 2019. And there's going to be more course offerings. This course is going to be also offered coming really soon in Georgia, Texas, and Maine. Advanced Search and Seizure Law. Great. One day, full day, very fast-paced, intense course. It's designed for law enforcement officers who are experienced, to take them up to the next level with their Fourth Amendment decision-making and this whole concept of advanced search and seizure law. There are other courses that are available. You can see our full catalog on the legal aspects of law enforcement, all the training we have available at Leah One. Again, www.lea.one. You can get more information about any of these training sessions on the website, or you can shoot us an email at comms@lea.agency, agency. We'll also go to the Leah One website. You can sign up for the Blue Flash Legal Update newsletter. We have case law updates with case summaries and a link to PDF, downloadable PDFs of the full opinion. And you can subscribe to this newsletter. It'll come to your email inbox no more than once a week. It's typically weekly. Sometimes they run a couple weeks between episodes or between newsletters. But the subscription link for the Blue Flash Legal Update newsletter can also be found on the Leah One website. I also want to make you aware of the Blue Blog. There's a blog on the Leah One site as well on cases, on these topics of the legal aspects of law enforcement, and it uses keywords. They're searchable, so you can go to the Blue Blog and you can type like a traffic stop and see all the cases that have been blogged with downloadable links to the full opinion right there. It's a great little quick research tool available for you on the Leah One website as well. Every case that's summarized in the Blue Flash is in the Blue Blog. And I also want to invite anyone who is attending the ILEADA conference in St. Louis this March to attend my presentation on critical legal updates and stop by and say hello. I'd love to meet you. Let me know what you think about the podcast. Let me know what you think about the Blue Flash newsletter, and just say hello, and be great to meet up with you face-to-face if you're headed to the ILEADA conference in St. Louis this March. Thanks so much for what you do, and thank you for joining me, and we'll have another episode out real soon.